Good afternoon.
Okay, this is Arlene Brothman, and I'm here with Corky McFarland. Corky, why don't you state your full name and your age and where you were born?
Well, my name is Corky McFarland, and I was born in Fort Madison, Iowa in 1928. Born in Fort Madison, Iowa there in the Midwest, raised in Midwest there, and grew up like a young kid during the Depression. You didn't have very much, and you walked everywhere you went or ran. Nobody had a car, and you went to school closest to you and so forth, and you didn't go out of town, and anybody's been out to the next town and back again, they've been pretty well around the world. So then the war broke out in 1941, then everything changed. And they used to carry papers at that time, and the biggest thing I've seen, that there used to be two or three pages like a Kodiak mirrors now. Then when the war broke out in 41, in December 41, the paper almost increased by five times that size. And it's all World War, and there was what most of it was, so.
All stuff about the war?
Mm-hmm. All about the war, everything, all overseas and so forth. But that was news. Was there
a big hype about Alaska and the Japanese?
There wasn't anything about Alaska any time.
Oh.
Wasn't anything. But you didn't hear very much about Alaska.
At all.
In 41. And in fact, the only people heard anything about it. The biggest thing in 41 was tigers over in Burma. Some of the American people went over, the Russians were flying to Burmas. And they had them flying tigers, and some of the people from Fort Madison, Iowa were flying the flying tigers. I remember when they came back in the last of 41, this friend of my brother's, and he had on a Russian uniform of flying tigers. And they just thought he was terrible because he's fighting for the Russians. He wasn't fighting the American war at that time. So that's, we weren't in the war at that time. He wasn't getting the war, so he went with the flying tigers over in Burma.
Oh, I see.
So after that, after the war, I went in the Army for a while, 46 and 47. I was in the Army Ordnance. Then I got out of there and I went to the Navy a year later. I was in Weather Central. May of 48, I got married to my wife. I'm still married to her. I came up here in Kodiak in December of 48. I got stationed up here in the Weather Central. Kodiak, nobody knew where Kodiak was, and it's all snow and ice, and you know, you're gonna die up there, so cold. Anyway, we came up here in the Weather Central, and we started doing weather ops up here, and the weather's so much different that you have to learn almost all over again. The clouds up here, like your low clouds and mid clouds, up here about like, or your high clouds up here about like our mid clouds and low clouds on stateside. They're not as high here because you're farther north, it's a lot colder, so they stay down lower. Biggest thing is weather was pretty well new in them days too, and you don't have weather stations reporting what the weather is. You had ships out in the sea, which in as many as there are now, and they reported into you. You didn't know whether they were right or whether they were wrong. So if it fit in the map, you put them in. If it didn't fit in the map, you didn't put them in. So
they would call in to you guys and tell you what the weather was like?
They sent it on observation teletype. It was all teletypes in those days.
Oh, I see.
So they sent it in there. Some of the obs that the pilots made, they came in on FAA, and they reported to us as that there. They came in. We came up here in Kodiak. You had the Navy station, and you had the Army. Fort Greely was there. And you had the Marine Corps, was protecting the military, the Navy, and then you had part of Coast Guard there. Coast Guard came there, I was thinking, in 47. They were patrolling all of the Aleutian chain. They had about 1,500 miles they were patrolling.
And why were they doing that?
They were patrolling during wartime, Cold War. They were patrolling that to keep the ships out and see if there's any other ships in activity. They were patrolling the shoreline belonging to the United States.
Right.
So that's what their main job was.
Uh-huh.
And then later on, their job was in fisheries. And they came up with a 200-mile limit from your thing. They had to go out 200 miles out and make sure that the foreign ships didn't come in and fish in those days. And I think the limit in most places are 3 miles from shore. And 3 miles from the shore would mean if you have a bay, you go out to the, out of the bay, draw a line across the head of the bay,
Where the mouth? Or where the river goes up, or where the?
No, where the outside.
Oh, I see.
Reach side, and then you draw a line across that, and it's 3 miles past that. It's not 3 miles from there, because then you'd be inside the bay.
Right.
So it's 3 miles outside the bay, across the line, and 3 miles off from there, where they used to fish at.
Uh-huh.
And it seemed a lot of fishing. Used to have just summer fishing in Kodiak. They didn't have fishing in wintertime, year-round. They just had it in summertime. People used to go out and make pretty good. They had small fish, small boats, and the average boat was about 25-footer. The big boat was 27, 30-footer. That was back in 49 and 50. And people just come up here during the summer. They had the Filipinos working in the canneries just in summertime. In wintertime, they didn't have any canneries working. And around the mid-50s, late-50s, they had king crab that came into effect. And they didn't start marking a king crab in about 1957. And Wakefield was the biggest man, I believe, at that time with crab. I'm not a fisherman, so I may not be right on that. But there's a story that he used to be at Port Wakefield over there, that he used to be about 3 miles out in the ocean, so he wouldn't take his ship away from him because he owed so much money when he first started out. But he stayed out there and got the king crab when people started liking king crab, so they started fishing year-round then.
Uh-huh.
And when they started fishing year-round, the canneries built up and brought people in, and they stayed here year-round. So then you had fishing year-round instead of just in summertime. And the boats went up to 100 feet then. So you can see the difference in fish. And they say the fish depleting and not have as much as you did in the past, but there weren't that many people fishing in the past.
Right.
Nowadays, they're talking about fishing for the boat and not fishing for the owner, because you got to pay for the boat. Some of the boats are millions of dollars. So you're fishing really for the boat and not for yourself.
Pay off the boat, right.
But I don't know that much about fishing. I worked at Power Plant on base. I got in the Navy there in 48 and got out in 15. I was a count crew supervisor for supply for Kodiak Naval Station for a year. Then I went into the power plant in 51. Which generated steam and electricity and had all the water and steam and electricity for the base. And Coast Guard Army went out here in 52. So when the Army went out here in 52, all their Fort Abercrombie and Shinnyack and all these places still had the same houses and everything that they had during the war. So it was just like a kid playing around in an empty town. And then the military started selling off all the houses, taking the houses down. And then the timber then the houses were better than what you buy anywhere in town. The timber they put in the house was A1.
Mm-hmm.
They were still better than what you could buy even if you made in Kodiak.
So what were the Aleutian homes?
Aleutian homes brought up here, they were made in 54.
Uh-huh.
But they were housing that they brought up here in 54, and it was made for a flat land. They weren't made for hilly land. That's reading your big picture window. They're facing a hill sometimes instead of the view that you have behind you.
Mm-hmm.
But that and your base, your Nisma Park on a base here, were built about the same time. A lot of your buildings on base and your military were taken down and rebuilt in town and so forth. Your church, after the name high school, used to be the Army Chapel. They moved the whole chapel over there, across where the junior high is now.
Uh-huh.
Today
on
Rosanna? No, it's
on the other side
of the street there.
Oh, that church.
Where Main School is at.
Yeah, I know where that is. Yeah. I'm not sure the name of that church.
That church was brought in originally from Fort Greedy. Fort Greedy was an Army base there. Fort Greedy is Fort Greedy, Alaska. They moved the whole base to Bethel, up north of Fairbanks. So when people talk about coming to Fort Greedy, they thought they was coming back to Kodiak, and they found out they were going to Bethel instead of nice, warm Kodiak. But fishing here has been real good. Hadn't been that many people fishing compared to what there is today. Your population in Kodiak was about 1,500, 2,000 people in the town. And when we first moved into town, my wife came up in 49. We moved into a house. The whole house was 30 by 30 and had four apartments in it. And the apartments were 15 by 15. And we thought that was pretty good, but compared to today's houses, it's kind of tight.
Yeah.
But people in them days used to laugh about selling refrigerators to the Eskimo, even to us. Nowadays, everybody's got a deep freeze, let alone a refrigerator. We used to have a window box, and you used to keep your food for 2 or 3 days, and that's all the food you buy. Today,
uh-huh.
You buy food for 6 months, and you throw out part of it when you get done with deep freeze. So a little bit different living then.
So So what, you put your food outside?
They had a box that you fit in the window.
Oh.
And the box was outside, just opened up the window and you took your milk.
Oh,
and
I see.
Butter and stuff out of your box here, called window box. Some people out in the wilderness still got that today.
Saves on electricity.
Yeah, saves quite a bit.
Yeah.
Don't have that. And all the heat in the houses were generally oil heat in them days. You had an oil stove.
Oil.
And the oil stove you did your cooking on, and the left side of your stove generally had your firebox. You had coils in there that your water ran from a hot water tank through those coils, and that's how you got your hot water tank. That's how you got your hot water. So you can see you didn't use much hot water in them days as you do nowadays. Your washing machine and garbage disposals and your dishwashers.
Mm-hmm.
So actually it's pretty simple. Electricity, like they say in Kodiak, went from a small 1 or 2 engine grip to hydroelectric now.
Yeah.
And pace in Kodiak has been pretty good. Most people, even when the service up here, used to send pictures home in wintertime. They never send pictures home in summertime.
How come?
Because they figure Alaska's all snow and ice and they wouldn't show them, the same as they said. We went back to the States in 63. We went out here in 63. The earthquake was 64 March, and we came back in 65, so we missed the earthquake.
So you missed it.
When we were back here, our young daughter was in school back here. Both of them, we got two daughters, one born in 54. And she was back here in school, and she teacher asked her how Kodiak was, Alaska, and she started telling how we go swimming in wintertime and green grass, and teacher told her not to lie. So she started telling how we lived in igloos made of ice, and how we used to shoot blubber whales and shoot blubber like that there, and house burnt down one time, and didn't really burn down, it melted down, you know, because there's no burning, but teacher believed it. So you can see that a lot of people got the wrong information, and people didn't have it, and they say you're lying, really you weren't lying. A lot of people didn't know that Alaska, especially even the interior, hotter than it does stateside.
Right.
And people here in Alaska don't think nothing of it, going swimming and so forth, but them days nobody ever got out of the States, so you really didn't know. Alaska was just nothing but snow and ice.
Right.
And even Kodiak came up in 48, your old woman's bay was completely froze over in 48. You could drive trucks across that ice in Bell's Flats. It was that solid. And since then I've really never seen it that solid before.
Uh-huh.
And your weather at Kodiak in them days, I was in Weather Central, and the average temperature in wintertime was about 28 degrees. But it got down to minus 10 and minus 15, not chill-wise, but otherwise, just regular weather, Fahrenheit.
Uh-huh.
And it got up to 80 degrees in 1949 or 50, in July 4th, it got up to about 80 degrees. And nobody did nothing, they just laid out. It was just too hot to do anything, they just sweated and whatever you do.
Uh-huh.
But life in Kodiak was slow, and you walked everywhere you went, or you hiked wherever you went. Nowadays it seems like you've got Chiniac in an hour or 2 hours. And used to, first time went out, Chiniac was in a Jeep when we went out to Middle Bay. We got out there in probably about half hour of Middle Bay, and I thought I was so far out of town I'd never get back. And pretty good, but more times you go somewhere, the easier it is. And the Air Force came in here and they built that Loran station. They built Air Force Tracking Center out in Chiniac. One time they had over 1,000 people working for them, living out there working for them. And White Alice on top of Pillar Mountain here, when they were working on that, they had quite a crew working on that. When they got 99.8% done, it was obsolete. So instead of taking it down, they took down half of them, left up two of them for telephone control. We used to talk in the old days was you call stateside something you want in the airway and everybody listened to you. So you have to watch what you said then.
That's good.
Back when first came up here, about the only thing you had was just to get togethers like playing cards or dancing or something like that. And naturally being in the Navy, you know, we had Navy down, we had a lot of talent in them days too. I can remember South Pacific put on by Navy guys on the base there. And just about like the picture was, mainly all men, because that's where they were. There weren't very many women around. So they had a couple women there, but they had mainly men. A lot of them were dressed up like women. And they were pretty good, but mainly you stayed in your kitchen, you drink coffee, and drink coffee, had popcorn, and then your spaghetti dinners and macaroni and cheese dinners like that. And get together like that in the daylight during the summer, you'd go out in the summertime and maybe go up, but you didn't have daylight saving time. So sunlight comes up at 7 like it does now. Actually, it's 5 o'clock in the morning sometime. Yeah. So what you did is biologically you changed that, and they didn't change anything else. So people up in Kodiak remember their dad and grandfather used to wake them up early in the morning to go out fishing, and that's 5 o'clock in the morning. Now they do the same thing, but it's 7 o'clock in the morning.
You do the same thing time. With your son and grandson.
Sometime. When I first came up here, I came from Iowa, we didn't have sunlight coming up that early. And I remember that sometime we'd go and watch at 6:30 in the morning, and sometime the guy forget to wake you up, put you in there. I was in a barracks here, in a single man's barracks here, in Weather Central. I remember one time I woke up, the sun hit me in the eyes, and I thought, they didn't wake me up. And I was mad, so I got up there, and I shaved, got ready to go, and I looked at the clock, it was 3:30. So I went back to bed. But it's kind of hard to get used to it, unless you've been in Alaska a long time, get used to the sunlight coming up as early as it does.
Uh-huh.
And then on the same reasoning that when you go out at night, we'd be out there hunting or out fishing or something like that, walking a hill, we wouldn't get back till 10 or 11 o'clock at night. We weren't thinking nothing of it until we figured 5 or 6 o'clock. Get 3 or 4 hours sleep, we'd be ready to go again. Then wintertime is just the opposite. Wintertime, you think, well, it must be bedtime. Here it is about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Then you get up and go to work when it's dark, you come home when it's dark, it's kind of a short day.
Yeah.
So we was driving along the highway one time, we picked up this young guy from college, and we picked him up and started talking to him. He was in Point Barrow. And he was talking what it's like to be in Point Barrow, and he says, like the first time you see the sun in springtime, he said, you see it for 1 second. He says, you've been there all this dark, he said, just like a flash, he said, you know it's there, but he said, just for that 1 second, he said, just like heaven opening up. He said, you never forget it, because he said, you never see it. It's like you're cold, you don't ever see a match burn, you remember that mask because it's so warm, even though it didn't last long. Well, same way with sunshine, he said, you don't know what it's like to be in the dark so long, then all of a sudden start seeing the sun come up for just minutes at a time, you know, another 24 hours become the end for maybe 2 minutes, and then you're getting brighter. So if a person starts to think about that, you see what, you don't really miss something until you don't have
right.
it.
Right, mm-hmm.
And those days you didn't run, like I said, you walked everywhere you went. Most of the socializing was done in the kitchen where everybody had coffee on. And the biggest thing, I guess, is you'd be hiking somewhere, you go about a mile out of town or 3 or 4 miles out of town, you see a house there. You know you were welcome to go in that house. They was there to give you coffee and something to eat. If they weren't there, it was all right for you to go in and make coffee and drink coffee and do the dishes and leave a little money or cut some wood for them. They would never be locked up. Nobody ever lost anything. So that had changed quite a bit.
Yeah. But
people used to have these hunting cabinets and they used to be open. You get stuck out somewhere like that and you go to these cabins. They weren't locked up and nobody bothered the cabins or nothing. So I don't know what it is, but you can't leave a car on the road today without getting somebody doing something to the windows or something. So whether it's just passing fancy or whether somebody figures that they're gaining for it, or if you don't have it, I'm going to have it. So I don't know, but it's pretty nice to be living when you don't have to worry about what you have and somebody's going to take it from you.
Yeah.
So, but Kodiak has been a good place, and if you like fishing and hunting, it's kind of rough on the women. It used to be rough on the women the old day. The men used to love it because they're hunting and fishing and everything, but the women didn't have nothing to do. So women liked the outdoors and find something to do, they liked it. So we had a friend of ours in the Navy with us up here, and he wasn't married. Then he came back every 3 or 4 years later, and he brought a wife with him, had a couple kids, and boy, she just hated Kodiak. So he's talking about Mary, my wife Mary, she's talking about us, you know, we love Kodiak. So she said, well, how can you love Kodiak now? I mean, you know, nothing to do or nothing. I said, well, all your friends don't like Kodiak either, do they? She says, no. I said, it's kind of hard because Kodiak, even when I came up here, Kodiak is temporary. It's not permanent. If you think Kodiak is being temporary, then you really don't belong here. You don't even feel like you're here. And them days, you're running up here for a year to 18 months, then people don't figure they're going to be here long enough to be Kodiak. They really don't want it. They don't like it. So I said, get people like Mary and I or some people like Kodiak. And I said, you're surprised. So, well, she did, because a year later when she left, she'd be crying. She didn't want to leave. So people you're around with, they don't like Kodiak, you have a tendency not to like Kodiak.
Yeah.
And I guess it's the same thing today. If people take drugs, you're around with them, you take drugs. So I think it's the same thing. You run around with people that's what you want to be and not what somebody else wants to be. And people in Kodiak, you ever say that Jenny's standing on 2 feet, because when you go out hunting, when you go out someplace, there's nobody around to help you. Mm-hmm. And nowadays you take radios and stuff with you, you get quite a bit of protection, but before that you go out and you don't want anybody to help, just whoever, five of you people went out, you five guys come back, you all help each other. Nowadays it don't seem to be that they have that. They still have it, but there seems to be, you hear so much on the other side. Mm-hmm. And kids in school the same way. They didn't have as many kids in school as you got nowadays. And quite a few has changed, and people have changed, your houses have changed, your houses now that you wouldn't dream of houses as big as they got today. We came up to Kodiak, figured anybody had a house that big, was didn't know what they wanted a house that big for. So it's like a car or anything else. People say, well, what do you want a car for? You can walk anywhere you want. But yeah. Now, if you don't have a car, you can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Unless you have the time. Seeing these people just don't have time anymore. But, we're talking about today, and might say yesterday or quite a while ago. I remember when I was a child growing up, and something happened, it's your fault. It's never somebody else's fault. See, me, when you take responsibility, that responsibility isn't age, nothing to do with age. Responsibility is the day that you, it's the day that you take responsibility for yourself, what you do. And nowadays, it's always somebody else's fault. We came up in Alaska in 48, and I remember we went back in 63, like I said, bought a house, and the man says this insurance covers a person that says he hurt, got hurt in your property, we give him $500. And I said, well, I don't see that. He said, well, that's just that. And he said, if a person does get hurt in the property, we give him $2,500 not to go to court. I said, well, you know, that's not right. He said, well, that's the way the world is today. That's what everybody pays for. You're paying for this, and everybody's paying for it. So nowadays, the idea is that you're not responsible for what people do. You're not responsible for your own actions. I think that's the biggest thing with kids today. And same way that you're young and you didn't do it right, you get your hind end spanked, or you got picked up by the ear. And, I mean, this is your correction. Nowadays, you do that, they put your mother and father in jail, or they do something like that, or take the kids away from you. But responsibility has to be with the kids. I mean, it has to be with the individual. And if they don't take responsibility, who is? So, I think the biggest thing is that today and that you grow up today, and they always tell you what they want and what they expect, and it's not your fault something happened. I think in the old days, when it's always your fault, you're falling off of something and get hurt, and It's like today, if somebody spills a cup of coffee, you can sue the company for spilling coffee on you. And yet at the same time, you're the one who's got the coffee. It should be your responsibility for what you do with that cup of coffee. If you get hurt, then that's up to you. But seeing to be like nobody wants responsibility, and everybody wants to give it to the government, or government wants to give it to you, or they want to tell you what you can do and everything. So I think philosophy has changed quite a bit, and it's not the old or young, it's just the idea of how you was raised. If you was raised to take care of yourself and be responsible for yourself, I don't think you have any problem. When you started being in a gang or have to be in somebody else to take care of you and do what they say, then that's not very much better than you don't have a life of your own. If you got a life of your own, you ought to be responsible for what you say. And if you believe what you say, you can do it. But to say something you know is wrong, you know it's wrong, there's somewhere down the road that you're going to have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. I think children in school should learn the burden of responsibility, and it's got nothing to do with age, it's responsibility of being able to understand what's right, and what's wrong. And it shouldn't happen because people, when I grew up, for instance, in 48, I went down to the bank and wanted to borrow some money. I didn't have no collateral. And the banker just looked at me and he says, well, how much do you want? And I said, $100 to bring my wife up here. I said, stay a couple months. I can't make it. I'll send her back home. He says, well, I don't think $100 would be enough. He said, if you want $200 or $300, she'd be glad to give it to you. And I said, well, I don't have any collateral. He said, I didn't ask you, did I? He says, it was made more on what they thought of you as a person for the people they meant. They know that you mean what you say. So they give you your money, loan you money on what you do, and not what your background is. Because a lot of people today, you take your resume. If you write your resume, you may not get anything out of your resume, but it's true. But you get somebody professional to make that resume. You read it yourself, well, who are we talking about? So they can change it around, so make a person look a lot better than what he is. But I always figured, they told me that if you're good, you're good. If you're not, you're not. There's not nothing you can do. So I think you do the best you can. I think that's the biggest thing. If you do the best you can, people respect you. But if you try to do something, you're not doing it right and get by with it, then I don't think respect you. So I think the biggest thing is earning respect for yourself and even a parent. A parent should have respect from his child, not expect to have respect just because of their parents.
Right.
And I think that's the biggest thing. But if you're in school, you should take care of yourself and help people out, and not listen to people trying to make you do what you should be doing. So. But overall, I think first take care of himself and try to take care of himself, and I think we get along in this world. But people trying to get something for nothing, I just don't think that works. It seems to work, but it doesn't seem to stay that way. I think the same way of being healthy and so forth, I'm about 67 years old, and I haven't been sick hardly any time in my life, and I can't think of any time I really got hurt. And due to martial arts for the last 40 years, I never got hurt, and people I teach don't get hurt. And I think it's the idea that you learn to take care of your body and don't think negative. If you think you're going to fall all the time, I'm sure you're going to fall. So the idea is try to take care of yourself and not do something you know it's going to hurt you. And I think that's the biggest thing to do is take care of yourself.